Chapter 21. When Sean woke the next morning, the hand of the grandfather clock across the bedroom pointed at the top of their dial. Candy was in the room opening the curtains, and with her were two waiters, each with a loaded tray.
"Good morning. How is our hero this morning?"
The waiters put down their trays and went out as she came across to Sean's bed. Sean blinked the sleep out of his eyes. "My throat feels as though I've just finished a meal of broken glass."
"That's the dust," Candy told him,
and laid her hands on his forehead. Sean's hands sneaked round behind her, and she squeaked as he pinched her. Standing well away from the bed, she rubbed her bottom and made a face at him.
"There's nothing wrong with you."
"Good, then I'll get up." Sean started to pull back the bedclothes.
"Not till the doctor's had a look at you, you won't."
"Candy, if that bastard puts one foot in this room, I'll punch him so hard in the mouth, his teeth will march out of his backside like soldiers." Candy turned to the breakfast trays to cover her smile.
"That's no way to talk in front of a lady. But don't worry, it isn't Simmons."
"Where's Duff?" Sean asked.
"He's having a bath. Then he's coming to eat breakfast with you."
"I'll wait for him. But give me a cup of coffee in the meantime. There's a sweetheart." She brought the coffee to him.
"Your savage has been camping on my trail all morning. He wants to see you. I've just about had to put an armed guard on this room to keep him out."
Sean laughed. "Would you send him in, Candy?" She went to the door and stopped with a hand on the latch.
"It's nice to have you back, Sean.
Don't do anything silly like that again, will you?"
"That's a promise," Sean assured her.
Ember Janey came quickly and stood in the doorway.
"Nkosi, is it well with you?"
Sean looked at the iodine-stained bandages on his hands and the maroon and gold livery without answering. Then he rolled onto his back and stared at the ceiling.
"I sent for my servant. Instead, there comes a monkey on a chain."
Ember Janey stood still, his face expressionless, but for the hurt in his eyes.
"Go, find my servant. You'll know him by his dress, which is that of a warrior of Zululand."
It took a few seconds for the laughter to start rolling around in Ember Janey's belly. It shook his shoulders and creased the corners of his mouth. He closed the door very softly behind him. And when he came back in his loincloth, Sean grinned at him.
"Ah, I see you, Ember Janey. And I see you also."
He stood by the bed, and they talked. They spoke little of the cave-in, and not at all of Ember Janey's part in the rescue. Between them it was understood. Words could only damage it. Perhaps they would talk of it later, but not now.
"Tomorrow, will you need the carriage?" Ember Janey asked at last.
"Yes. Go now. Eat and sleep."
Sean reached out and touched Ember Janey's arm. Just that small physical contact, that almost guilty touching, and Ember Janey left him. Then Duff came in a silk dressing gown, and they ate eggs and steak from the trays, and Duff sent down for a bottle of wine, just to rinse the dust out of their throats once more.
"They tell me Francois is still down at the Bright Angels. He's been on the drunk ever since he got out of that shaft. When he sobers up, he can come to the office and collect his pay packet."
Sean sat up.
"You're going to fire him?"
"I'm going to fire him so high he'll only touch ground when he reaches Cape Town."
"What the hell for?" demanded Sean.
"What for?" Duff echoed.
"What for?"
"For running. That's what for." Duff. He was in a cave-in at Kimberley, wasn't he?
Yes.
Broke his legs, didn't you say?
Yes.
Shall I tell you something? If it were to happen to me a second time, I'd run as well.
Duff filled his wine glass without answering.
Send down to the Bright Angels. Tell him alcohol is bad for the liver.
That should sober him.
Tell him unless he's back at work by tomorrow morning, we'll dock it off his pay,
Sean said.
Duff looked at him with a puzzled expression. What is this?
I've had time to think while I was down that hole.
I decided that to get to the top, you don't have to stamp on everyone you meet.
Ah, I understand,
Duff gave his lopsided grin. A good resolution. New Year in August.
Well, that's all right. Had me worried there. I thought a rock had fallen on your head.
I also make good resolutions.
Duff, I don't want Francois fired.
All right, all right. He stays on.
If you like, we can open a soup kitchen at the office and turn Xanadu into a home for the aged.
I'll go and burst. I just don't think it's necessary to fire Francois, that's all.
Who's arguing? I agreed with you, didn't I?
I have deep respect for good resolutions. I make them all the time.
Duff pulled his chair up to the bed.
Quite by chance, I happened to have a pack of cards with me. He took them out of his dressing-gown pocket. Would you care for a game of clabbages?
Sean lost £50 before he was saved by the arrival of the new doctor. The doctor tapped his chest and tut-tutted, looked down his throat and tut-tutted, wrote out a prescription and confined him to bed for the rest of the day. He was just leaving when Jock and Trevor Haynes arrived. Jock had a bunch of flowers, which he presented to Sean in an embarrassed fashion. Then the room began to fill in earnest. The rest of the crowd from the exchange arrived. Someone had brought a case of champagne. A poker game started in one corner, and a political meeting in another.
Who does this Kruger think he is, anyway? God or something? You know what he said last time we went to see him about getting the vote? He said, "Protest! Protest! I have the guns, and you have not."
Three Kings wins. You are holding cards.
You wait and see. Consolidated Wits will hit 30 shillings by the end of the month. And the taxes! They're putting another 20% on dynamite. A new piece at the opera. Jock's got a season ticket on her. No one else has had a look in yet.
All right, you two, stop that. If you want to fight, go outside. This is a sick room.
This bottle's empty. Break open another one, Duff.
Sean lost another 100 to Duff. Then a little after 5, Candy came in. She was horrified.
Out! All of you, out!
The room emptied as quickly as it had filled, and Candy wandered around picking up cigar butts and empty glasses.
The vandals! Someone's burnt a hole in the carpet. And look at this! Champagne spilt all over the table.
Duff coughed and started pouring himself another drink.
Don't you think you've had enough of that, Dufford?
Duff put down his glass.
And it's time you went and changed for dinner.
Duff winked sheepishly at Sean, but he went. Duff and Candy came back to his room after supper and had a liqueur with him.
Now to sleep,
Candy commanded, and went across to draw the curtains.
It's still early,
protested Duff with no effect. Candy blew the candle out. Sean wasn't tired. He'd lain in bed all day, and now his brain was overactive. He lit a cigar and smoked, listening to the street noises below his window, and it was past midnight before he finally drifted off. When he woke screaming, for the darkness was on him again, and the blankets pressed down on him, suffocating him. He fought them off and stumbled blindly across the room.
He had to have air and light. He ran to the thick velvet curtains, and they closed around his face. He tore himself free and hit the French windows with his shoulder. They burst open, and he was out on the balcony, out in the cold air, with the moon fat and yellow in the sky above him. His gasping slowed until he was breathing normally again. He went back inside and lit the lamp. Then he went through to Duff's empty bedroom. There was a copy of Twelfth Night on the bedside table, and he took it back to his own room. He sat with the lamp at his elbow and forced his eyes to follow the printed words, even though they made no sense. He read until the dawn showed grey through the open windows. Then he put down the book. He shaved, dressed, and went down the back stairs into the hotel yard. He found Ember Janey in the stables. "Put a saddle on the grey."
"Where are you going, Nkosi?"
"To kill a devil."
"Then I will come with you."
"No. I will be back before midday." He rode up to the Candy Deep and tied his horse outside the administration buildings. There was a sleepy clerk in the front offices.
"Good morning, Mr. Courtney. Can I help you?"
"Yes. Get me overalls and a helmet." Sean went to the number 3 shaft. There was a frost on the ground that crunched as he walked on it, and the sun had just cleared the eastern ridge of the Witwatersrand. Sean stopped at the hoist shed and spoke to the driver.
"Has the new shift gone on yet?"
"Half an hour ago, sir."
The man was obviously surprised to see him.
"The night shift finished blasting at 5 o'clock.
"Good. Drop me down to the 14th level."
"The 14th's abandoned now, Mr. Courtney. There's no one working there."
"Yes, I know." Sean walked across to the head of the shaft. He lit his carbide lamp, and while he waited for the skip, he looked out across the valley. The air was clear, and the sun threw long shadows. Everything stood out in sharp relief. He hadn't been up this early in the morning for many months, and he'd almost forgotten how fresh and delicately coloured a new day was. The skip stopped in front of him. He took a deep breath and stepped into it. When he reached the 14th level, he got out and pushed the recall signal for the skip, and he was alone in the earth again. He walked up the tunnel, and the echo of his footsteps went with him. He was sweating, and a muscle in his cheek started to jerk. He reached the face and set the carbide lamp down on a ledge of rock. He checked to make sure his matches were in his pocket. Then he blew out the light. The darkness came squeezing down on him. The first half hour was the worst. Twice he had the matches in his hand, ready to strike, but he stopped himself. The sweat formed cold, wet patches under his arms, and the darkness filled his open mouth and choked him. He had to fight for each lungful of air, suck in, hold it, breathe out. First he regulated his breathing, and then slowly, slowly, his mind came under control, and he knew he had won. He waited another 10 minutes, breathing easily and sitting relaxed with his back against the side of the tunnel. Then he lit the lamp. He was smiling as he came back to the lift station and signaled for the skip. When he reached the surface, he stepped out and lit a cigar. He flicked the match into the square black opening of the shaft. So much for you, little hole. He walked back towards the administration building. What he could not know was that the number 3 shaft of the Candy Deep was to take something from him just as valuable as his courage, and that next time what it took it would not give back. But that was many years ahead.